Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Tzadi Aleph Amud Aleph, two lines down. The Gemara is trying to answer the question that it posed right after the Mishnah, which is when you have Tadir and Mikudash, when you have a conflict between these two forms of hierarchy, which one goes first? Is it Mikudash or is it Tadir? So the Gemara tried to bring a proof from the Tmidim and Musafim, and then it rejected it. The Gemara now is going to bring several proofs in the same genre and answer the same thing in each case, which is Tashma, Musafei Shabbat could mean the Musafei Rosh Chodesh. Musafim of Shabbat take precedence over the Musafim of Rosh Chodesh. So from there you would conclude that Shabbat, which is Tadira, takes precedence over Rosh Chodesh, which is less Tadir. Even though Rosh Chodesh is more Mikudash, as Rashi explains over here that Rosh Chodesh or the Musafei Rosh Chodesh, first of all, Rosh Chodesh is called the Moed, and number two is Rosh Chodesh has the Seir HaChatan, which brings a particular form of Kapara along with it. So the Musafei Rosh Chodesh are more Mikudash, yet we still give precedence to the Musafei Shabbat because they are Tidirim. Gemara answers in a similar fashion as it did before. Hatu Rosh Chodesh, the Musafim Didei Ahani, the Musafei Shabbat Lo Ahani. So is it that Rosh Chodesh elevates or is Mikadesh its own Musafim, but has no impact on the Musafei Shabbat? It's just not true. The Rosh Chodesh imbues not only its own Musafim, but also the Musafei Shabbat with an additional level of Kedusha. Therefore, the Musafim on Shabbat Rosh Chodesh, those Musafei Shabbat are different than the Musafim on a regular Shabbat because they are tied to Rosh Chodesh. The day of Rosh Chodesh itself imbues them with an additional level of Kedusha. Tashma, Musafei Rosh Chodesh could mean the Musafei Rosh Hashanah. Afagav, the Rosh Hashanah Kedusha. Even though Rosh Hashanah is on a higher level of Kedusha, both from the perspective of its Korbanei Musaf indicate that it's in when the cycle of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur and the Shmini Atzeret, which is the cycle of the Yamim Noraim, as well the fact that Rosh Hashanah is the day of judgment, and therefore Rosh Hashanah, or the Musafei Rosh Hashanah, you would think would get precedence because of their Kedusha. Despite that fact, the Musafei Rosh Chodesh go first. Again, here you have Rosh Chodesh, which is more Tadir, going before Rosh Hashanah, which is more Mikudash. I think you're right on a more generic sense that Shabbat is more Chomor than Rosh Chodesh, but to speak to the Musafim in particular, the Musafei Rosh Chodesh are more Kadosh than the Musafei Shabbat. They include a Chatat, which is differentiated. They have a larger number of Olot that are brought through the Korbanei Musaf versus the two that are brought for Shabbat. And in addition, the fact that it's called a Moed also gives it, or the Musafim, a unique status. The Ramban, Ala Torah, speaks about in Parshat Tamor that Moed involves a concept of tzibur gathering together, where he actually might think that tefillah is the oraita, and that there's aspects here of gathering the people together that changes the nature of the davening and the korbanot on the day, because it's moed in the sense of ba'ad, that people get together, and the gathering of the people, and the Ramban says that means the gathering of the people to daven, to say halal, that there's an additional level of the oraita in the aspect of the day where people gather together to pray and maybe to bring korbanot. So that uniqueness imbues the Musafim with possibly a higher level of Kiddusha. So I agree with you, the day itself might be that Shabbat is more Chamura than Rosh Chodesh, and we know that from the punishment, we know that from the fact that it's called Shabbat Shabbaton, but in the end, it might be that the Musafim, in particular by Rosh Chodesh, have that level of Kiddusha, and it does manifest itself in the way that we practice, at least according to the Minhag HaGrah, that on Shabbat Rosh Chodesh, the Gra says that we say the Shir Shayom Shir Rosh Chodesh. In general, whenever Shabbat is in conflict with any other holiday or any other particular day, over there we say that Shabbat takes precedence, and we say Mizmor Shir Yom HaShabbat. The exception to that is Rosh Chodesh. By Rosh Chodesh, we would say Barchi Nafshi and not Mizmor Shir Yom HaShabbat according to the Gra. And that's the practice in Eretz Yisrael to say Barchi Nafshi on Rosh Chodesh. You see, despite the fact that Shabbat is more Chamura, Rosh Chodesh has the ability in some areas to override Shabbat, and in particular with regards to Musafim and the Shir Shalayom, we see that Rosh Chodesh is given precedence over the Shabbat. Atu Rosh Hashanah Musafei Didei Ahani, the Musafei Rosh Chodesh Lo Ahani. So you're going to see again here, Rosh Hashanah elevates its own Musafim, but does not elevate the Musafei Rosh Chodesh. Again, when Rosh Chodesh coincides with Rosh Hashanah, which happens every year, that Rosh Chodesh is different than any other Rosh Chodesh on the rest of the year. It's different in a number of ways. One is that there we subvert Rosh Chodesh. We don't even really mention it on Rosh Hashanah, even though it really exists. So you see that Rosh Hashanah has an impact not only on itself, but also on the Musafei Rosh Chodesh as well. And so if that's the case, you can't really say that Musafei Rosh Hashanah and Mikudash Mei Rosh Chodesh, they're really on par now because they're both imbued or infused with the Kedusha of Rosh Hashanah. And so now it's just a question of Tadir, and therefore Rosh Chodesh will trump and be given precedence over that of Rosh Hashanah. Tashma, Davar Acher. This deals with the machloket between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai with regards to Kiddush Hayom and the Birkat HaYayin, as to which goes first. Do we first make Birkat HaYayin Bori Pri HaGofen, and then afterwards we make the Birkat of Kiddush, which is Mekadesh HaShabbat, or vice versa? Beit Shammai thinks that you do the Birkat HaYayin first, and then the Birkat HaYayin. So the Mishnah started out with their disagreement revolving around what is the cause of what. Beit Hillel says that the Yayin is Goreim LeKiddush, whereas Beit Shammai says the Yom is Goreim LeYayin. So then it says Davar Acher. The other thing that they argue about, or another reason behind their argument, is Birkat HaYayin Tadira, Birkat HaYom Eina Tadira. When it comes to the Birkat HaYayin, it's more frequent, whereas the Birkat HaYom is less frequent. So V'Tadir, V'Sheinu Tadir, whenever you have a conflict between something that's more frequent and something that is less frequent, Tadir Kodeim. The item that is more frequent will take precedence. So, af al gav de Birkat HaYom Kedusha. So again here, even though the Birkat HaYom has a higher level of Kedusha, it is about Kedushat HaYom, Yayin in the end is exactly that, Yayin. And so you have here a bracha on something that's kulin, and you have a bracha about the Kedushat HaYom. And so now you want to know which one goes first. We look at frequency, despite the fact that the Birkat HaYom is more kadosh. Again, seeming to indicate that frequency will trump the issue of Kedusha. And again, the Gemara answers, Atu Shabbat, the Birkat HaYom, Ahanai, the Birkat HaYayin, Lo Ahanai. Is it the case that the Shabbat infuses the day and Kedushat HaYom to the point that the Kiddush HaYom or the Birkat HaYom is more Kadosh, but the Yayin that you drink on Shabbat is just not the same Yayin that you drink during the weekday? It also infuses the Yayin with a level of Kedusha that might also have halakhic impact with regards to the Yayin, because you could just think about Kiddush on Friday night as being a combination of a Birkat HaNenin, which is Ala Yayin, and then a Birkat HaKiddush, which is the Birkat HaMitzvah, and what type of bracha it is that we can discuss in a different context, but then there would be a distinction between the brachot. The way that the Gemara is formulating it here, that the Kedusha infuses not only the Birkat HaZman, Mikadesh HaShabbat, but also the bracha of Birkat HaYayin, that would indicate that the Birkat HaYayin might also be a quasi-Birkat HaMitzvah, because it's not just Yayin in the sense of Birkat HaNenin, because here the Gemara says the Kedusha of Shabbat infuses that Birkat HaYayin and makes it a different type of Birkat HaYayin. That might make it that the Birkat HaYayin is also a Birkat HaMitzvah. That would have implications for Yatza Motzi, which is that someone already did the mitzvah, can they be Motzi other people? By Birkat HaMitzvah, the case is yes. By Birkat HaKenenim, the answer is no. Or in a case where a person is not getting hanah, they're not going to drink from the yayin of kiddush, can they make the brocha? If it's birkat hanenin, the answer would be no. If it's birkat mitzvah, the answer would be yes. And we find that the Mishnah Berurah brings that, for instance, if an individual is making kiddush for another family, an almanah, on his way home to his house, and he stops there to make kiddush with the almanah, he does not plan on drinking from the kiddush there because it's not kiddush from makom suda, he's not staying. In that case, he can make the birkat hayayin, even though he's not going to drink from the yayin. Others will drink from it, but he can still make the bracha, which seems to indicate that there is a aspect of Birkat HaMitzvah inside of the Birkat HaYayin, and that might be what the Gemara is speaking to over here, where it says that Shabbat affects not only Birkat HaZman, but also the Birkat HaYayin. The additional thing to just note over here, we're going to get to in the Gemara in a second, is that why is it that you say over here that Birkat HaYayin is Tadir, is more frequent? It's just not true. Birkat HaYayin, there's no obligation to drink wine on a regular basis or every day. It might be that people drink wine on every day, but that doesn't make it into something that is frequent. Rather, it makes it into something that's commonplace. And that doesn't necessarily mean that it is Tadir. The Shagad Aryeh, who speaks a lot on this Gemara, says over here that he thinks that the Birkat HaYayin is Tadir, not because people drink wine during the week, but rather because Birkat HaYayin is associated with many mitzvot. We have Birkat HaYayin associated with Kiddush, with Havdalah, with Brit Milah, with all sorts of mitzvot where there's a requirement of Birkat HaYayin. So that's what it means it's Tadir. It's more frequent because there are times where there's an obligation to drink wine, whereas when it comes to the Shabbat, that obligation only happens once a week. Whereas the Birkat HaYayin can take place both on Shabbat and all through the week based on the different obligations that we have, including the mitzvot that have a requirement for Birkat HaYayin. And that's how he explains over here that it is more tadir and not just more commonplace. So Tashma, Damar Rabbi Yochanan, Lacha mitfalel adam shel mincha, v'acha kach shel musafin. That person, when he has a conflict between mincha and musaf, he's in the afternoon, he hasn't daven musaf, he hasn't daven mincha, what should he do first? We tell him to daven mincha first, and then afterwards musafin. So now, in terms of mincha, mincha is davened every single day, and there's nothing unique or kadosh about mincha because it's a tefillah that you say whether it's Shabbat or whether it is a weekday. On the other hand, musafim are uniquely associated with the day. So that means that they are connected to the kedushat ayom. So again, here you have seemingly a conflict between tidirut, frequency, which is the mincha, versus the musafim, which are yoter kedoshim. And so Rabbi Yochanan says, you daven mincha first, which seems to indicate again that the hierarchy of frequency would take precedence over the hierarchy of kedusha. The Gemara says, "Atu Shabbat l'tfilat musafim ahanai l'tfilat mincha lo anai." Is it really true that Shabbat impacts the tefillah of musaf, but does not impact the tefillah of mincha? It's not true. Mincha is also affected by the fact that it's Shabbat, and the evidence of that is that we daven a different mincha on Shabbat than we do during the weekday. On the weekday we have Shmoneh Esrei brachot. On Shabbat b'mincha we have Sheva brachot. So the fact that there's a change in the nusach of mincha shows you that Shabbat is impactful on the mincha, even though mincha is the same, quote-unquote, mincha that we daven all week long. So you see that the kedusha of Shabbat is not just affecting the fact that you have to daven musaf, it's also affecting the mincha that you daven during the week. The mincha on Shabbat is not your mincha of the weekday. Tashma, shlamim shel emesh, chatat v'asham shel yom. So we have this from our Mishnah, and we discussed this yesterday. If you have shlamim that were from yesterday, and a chatat v'asham that are today. Shlamim shel emesh kodmin. In that case, the shlamim from yesterday take precedence. So Rashi said it was speaking to the question of which one goes first in terms of hakrava. The Ba'i Tosafot Nashit Mekubetzit bring a girsa in Rashi that indicates it's a question about priority of eating the korban. Which korban do you consume first? That's the question that the Mishnah is addressing. Ha, the diyuk that you want to make from that is, idi v'idi diyom, had they both been from the same day, Chatat v'asham kadme. Chatat v'asham would take precedence. Ve'af agav d'shlamim tidire. Even though the shlamim are more frequent. In that case, in the Mishnah seemingly says, kedusha trumps over tidirut. So this is the opposite conclusion to all the other cases that we brought before. In this circumstance, we're saying that it is the chatat v'asham that will take precedence over the shlamim. So Amar Rava, Rava challenges Matsui Kamart. You're conflating terms over here. There's a difference between what we call commonplace and the frequency. When it comes to shlamim, you are right that they are more commonplace. It does not mean that they are more tadir, more frequent. Now, the word tadir does not just mean frequent, but it means frequent and regular, which is that there's an obligation to bring it. That's how the Gemara is understanding the word tadir. It's a frequency that has regularity to it because it is a chuvah. On the other hand, the shlamim are not more frequent or regular, they're just more commonplace. And that is because shlamim are the forms of korbanot that are brought as nidarim and nidavot, the shalmei chagiga, shalmei simcha, and then the nidarim and nidavot. Between all of those, they're just more of them or more commonplace than the chatat v'asham. The truth is that an olah also is brought as a neder nidava. So that would seem to indicate that an olah, besides the nidarim and nidavot, which also has obligatory olot that are brought would have been the most frequent korban, not the shlamim. Nevertheless, the Gemara brings the shlamim as being the most commonplace korban, because generally in the nedarim and the nedavot, people will bring a shlamim and not an olah. Just in reality, there were just more shlamim. But Rava says you're conflating terms, and tadir kami bailan. Our question is about something that is frequent, matsui lo kami bailan. We're not asking about something that is more commonplace. So you bring me a proof about something that's more commonplace, and you're trying to show through that that tadirut, that frequency, is subordinated to kedusha, but that you can't prove from this because we don't know anything about tadirut with regards to the shlamim. So Amarle Rav Huna Bar Yehuda L'Ravo. So he challenges Rava's assumption here that there's such a distinction. Atu matsui lav tadir. Since when is commonplace, not frequent, or not regular? V'atanya otziata pesach she'inu tadir v'lo otziata mila shehi tadira. Mara is speaking about the issue of karet, that Pesach and Milah are uniquely the two mitzvot to say that have a chiyuv karet associated with them, as opposed to all the other chivei karet, which are isur lavin. And so the question is, does the korban chatat, which comes for a shigagat kretot, does that have application to milah and pesach, or is it only associated with the lavin? So the Gemara tells us, it says, asher lo ta'asena. It's only relevant for lo ta'ases. In the process of discussing that, the Braita contrasts Pesach and Milah in the decision as to whether to include them or not include them. And it says, Otsiyat Pesach Shenu Tadir, I'll exclude the Pesach, which is not frequent, because the Pesach only comes once a year. Velo Otsiyat Milah Shehit Tidira, and I won't exclude the Milah because that is more frequent. It's clear here that the word Tidira cannot mean frequent or regularity, because nobody knows when there's going to be a Milah. There's no chuvah of milah on any given day. It comes about whenever there's a child that's born that needs a milah on the eighth day. So again, it's more commonplace than the Pesach, but it's not necessarily more frequent than the Korban of Pesach. Yet the Braita still calls that fact that it's commonplace tidira. Rava answers, my tidira. Tidira in the Braita there does not mean more frequent, even though it's speaking to commonplace. Tidira b'mitzvot. It is more abundant, filled with a mitzvah. The way Rashi explains it over here is, sidura b'mitzvot. So tidira doesn't mean necessarily frequent, but it means that it is encompassed, or surrounded, or brought together by many mitzvot. Shenichrutu aleha shloshesrei b'itot b'tzivuyin. As the Gemara points out in a number of places, the word brit is mentioned 13 times with the regards to the covenant of brit milah. And that gives it this elevated status that it is a significant mitzvah that has all of these britot and sivuim that are associated with it. So that's the idea of tidira. It's a very, very, honestly, difficult explanation of the word tidira. It's very hard to see the correlation between the two. Tidira means frequent. It'd be much more reasonable to assume that commonplace might be synonymous with that, or even conflated with that, but to say tidira b'mitzvot, it is more frequent in mitzvot, when it's all associated with that singular mitzvah, seems to be a very, very stretched explanation of the word tidira in that context. V'ibayitema, and that's likely why the Gemara has an alternate answer to this, which is, mila l'gabei pesach kitadir damya. There are times where there is such a contrast between the two items, that even if it's not something that is frequent and regular, you could still call one tadir and one eno tadir. Commonplace, but still deem it to be tadir, because there's such a great distinction between them. Korban Pesach comes once a year. Brit Milah is going to come at least more than once a year. And so, Brit Milah is so much more commonplace than the Korban Pesach, that we will deem the Brit Milah to have the standing of tadir, even though it's not in reality something that is tadir, because there's no obligation, or there's no fixed obligation to do a Brit Milah on any regular interval. Alright, so now the next question of the Gemara. Ibailu, tadir, v'she'enu tadir. Nothing to do with yushar or not kedushah. Just something where it's once more frequent than the other. V'kadim v'shachat v'she'enu tadir. And the person violated the normal procedures of hierarchy, and he went ahead and shechted the she'enu tadir. Mai. What do we do in that instance? Similar to a question that's asked with regards to ha'osik v'mitzvah, potur min ha'mitzvah. Someone's engaged in a mitzvah, then they're potur from the other mitzvah. What happens if the person against that rule stops the mitzvah they're doing and then engages in the other mitzvah? Do we then say to them, okay, you engaged in the other mitzvah, so you're no longer invoking the principle of osik mitzvah, potur mitzvah, finish up that mitzvah and then go back to the original mitzvah? Or do we say that that violation is a begam in the previous mitzvah, I'm going to tell you, stop the new mitzvah and go back to the original mitzvah, because osik mitzvah, potur min ha'mitzvah, there it could be even true formulation that the other mitzvah you're not even chayav in. But even if you say you're chayav, maybe it's a zilzul in the first mitzvah, and we're going to compel you to go back to the first mitzvah. So the same thing over here. When you have tadir, she'enu tadir, and you violated that hierarchy, what's the din? Mi arminin came into shachtei. Since you already did the shkita, makrivle, just finish it up. Once you already started it, just finish it up. You shouldn't have done it, but once you've done it, just finish it up. Odilma, yaiv la'acher dimimareis bidamo. Or we tell him, hand over the dam to someone else to keep mixing it so that it doesn't coagulate. Ad makrivle the tadir. Until then, you do the shkita on the more tadir. V'hadar makrivle she'enu tadir. And then you'll come back and finish off she'enu tadir. So that's the question here. When you violate the hierarchy, how do we deal with it? Do we say, stop in the middle of whatever you're doing, go take care of the tadir, and then come back to this item. Or say, once you mistakenly started it, just finish it up, and then you go and take care of the tadir afterwards. So, Amar Rav Huna Misura Tashma. So again, we're going back to our Mishnah. And again, we're going to follow the explanation of Rashi and then go back and explain it based on the Shittim Mikubetz and the Tosfot. Shlamim Shel Emesh. So we had Shlamim from yesterday. Chatat Va'asham Shel Yom. And you have Chatat Asham today. Shel Emesh Kodem L'Shel Yom. Yesterday's Korban takes precedence over today. Had Yom Dumya De'emesh. But had it been a scenario that is today similar to the scenario of yesterday, Ve'echi Dami. And what is that scenario? The Kodim Shachte the Shlamim. In a case where you went ahead and Shachte the Shlamim, even though you were supposed to do the Chatat Vasham first, Chatat Vasham Kadme. And the Mishnah still tells us that the Chatat Vasham will go first. So you see from that, that in a case where you mistakenly went ahead and Shachte the Shlamim, that we go tell you to go and take care of the Chatat Vasham and give them precedence. So again, Rashi explains over here, it's a case where you brought the Shlamim yesterday, and then you Shechted it in the morning. Since you already Shechted the Shlamim, and it was Shel Emesh, we give it precedence to be done completely. We tell you, finish up the Shlamim, and then only afterwards deal with the Chatat V'Asham. On the other hand, if it's a situation where you didn't Shecht the Shlamim yet, and yes, you brought the Shlamim yesterday, and there's a Chatat V'Asham sitting in front of you, over there, we would say, do the Chatat V'Asham first, because they are Kodshei Kodoshim versus Kodshei Kalim. The only time that the Emesh factor comes up is if you've already started to do a Voda with regards to the Shlamim. So if you've Shechted it already, then we say to you, finish it up and give precedence to it because it was from Emesh. The implications for that are, and that's what the Gemara is saying here, is that if you brought the Shlamim today, and the Chatat V'Asham today, and you Shechted the Shlamim, that would mean that we would tell you, put it on hold, and then go do the Chatat V'Asham. That's the same scenario. Just now, instead of being Emesh, it's Hayom. And the Mishnah says, only when it's Emesh does the Shlamim get precedence. But in a case where it's not Emesh, the Shlamim does not get precedence. And again, in a similar scenario where you've already Shechted the Shlamim, that's where the question arises. So you've Shechted the Shlamim. If it's Emesh, finish it. If it's not Emesh, you don't finish it. You make him wait. So it's exactly what we're looking for. We're trying to come up with a scenario where you're already engaged in the item that you weren't supposed to engage. And we tell you, put it on hold. And finish it up. Now here it's speaking about an issue of something that's Yoter Mikudash, but we're going to apply that hierarchy that we say by Yoter Mikudash to also to deroot, to do with frequency, and we have to say the same thing over there. So that's the way Rashi explains it. Now if you go to the Girsa of Tosafot and Shittim Mikubetzin and Rashi, that it's speaking about Achila, then the diuk is the following. If you shechted the Shlamim yesterday, and now it comes to today, and you have a choice whether to eat the Shlamim or eat the Chatat V'Asham, we say over there, eat the Shlamim because it was from Emesh before the Chatat V'Asham, even though they're Yoter Mikudash. But in a scenario where the Shlamim was Shechted today, and now you have a choice to eat the Shlamim of today, today, and the Chatat V'Asham today, we're going to tell you, even if you started to eat the Shlamim, we're going to tell you, stop, and now go take care of the Chatat V'Asham. Go eat the Chatat V'Asham. Or even if you didn't start eating it, we're going to tell you to eat the Chatat V'Asham first. And that shows you that even if you've engaged in the Shlamim, and you already Shechted it, we don't tell you eat it first over the Chatat V'Asham, we tell you to deal with the Chatat V'Asham. So once again there, you see that despite the fact that you already engaged in something that you shouldn't have, we don't tell you to give precedence to that. So too over here. But Tadir Sheinu Tadir, we're going to apply it in the same manner to say that we won't give it precedence. The Gemara says that that's not the scenario here, but Dilma Shlamim De'emesh V'Chatat V'Asham De'yom Heche Mishkachat Lo. What is the scenario here? The Shechatinu L'Tarvayu. It's a case where you Shechted both of them. Meaning that we said the deal out of the scenario in the Mishnah was, you have a Shlamim from yesterday and Chatat V'Asham from today. And then the contrasting case would be where you have the Shlamim of today and you have the Chatat V'Asham of today. So that contrast would say that when they are done together today, you put the Shlamim on hold. But now the Gemara says, maybe that's not the way to read it. You made the wrong deal. The deal is the following. If you shechted the Shlamim from yesterday, then it will take precedence over processing the Chatat V'Asham. What happens in a case where you shechted both of them? And that's the contrasting case. The contrasting case is not where you just shechted the Shlamim, but it's a case where you shechted both the Shlamim and the Chatat V'Asham. In that case, we'll tell you to put the Shlamim on hold and then continue with the Chatat V'Asham. So if you had come and asked us the question right after you shechted the Shlamim, we would have told you, finish up the Shlamim because you're already engaged with it. Finish it up. But now that you shechted the Shlamim, and then without asking us, went ahead and shechted the Chatat V'Asham, in that case, we're going to say that you then continue to to work with the Chatat Vasham, because you already put the Shlamim on hold to do the Shkita of the Chatat Vasham. In that case, we tell you to finish it up. But in a scenario where we Shech the Shlamim of today, and we have yet to deal with the Chatat Vasham, over there, we're not addressing that in the Mishnah at all. And for that reason, now you can't make any deal with the Mishnah, and it won't bring you an answer. That's what the Gemara says over here, that maybe Eichem Ishkach Lod Shechit HaTavayu. But if he didn't check both of them, it would remain a question. So instead of making the contrast, a case where you shechted the Shlamim today, versus then determining what to do after that Shechita with the Chatat Vasham, we're going to say the contrasting case is where you shechted both of them today. A case where you have a Shlamim Shalet Mol, which is now shechted, and the Chatat that shechted will tell you to go on and finish off the processing of the Shlamim from Emesh. But if it was a Shlamim Shalayom, we would tell you to finish up the Chatat Vasham and not the Shlamim. But again, then, it's not addressing our issue, which is where you violated the hierarchy, and then what do you do? Do we put it on hold? Do we don't put it on hold? That's not the scenario that's being addressed in the case of the Mishnah. The Gemara now continues and says, Tashma, Davar Acher, that's again, this is what we brought above. Birkata Yayin Tadira, or Birkata Yom, Eina Tadira, Vitadir, Visheinu Tadir, Tadir Kodem. So over there, we have a scenario in which the Kedushat Hayom came in beforehand, because the Kedushat Hayom happens immediately upon Shkia. Now you're coming to make Kiddush, it's later on into the evening, now you're making Kiddush, you're bringing out the Birkat HaYayin and saying, I'm saying Birkat HaYayin, despite the fact that Shabbat already started, Kedushat HaZman, Kedushat Hayom was already there. So since you, quote-unquote, inappropriately began the Kedushat Hayom, we allow you then to interrupt it, do the Birkat HaYayin, which is the Tadira, and then you go back to doing the Birkat HaYom, or Birkat HaZman. So you see from there that when the hierarchy is engaged inappropriately, we tell you to do it the right way. We put Kedushat HaZman on hold, and we do Birkat HaYayin. The Gemara's answer over here is similar to what it said before, which is, Hachanami Kevin de Adyon, since they both devolve upon the person simultaneously, Keman de Shchitei Tarvayu Dami. It's equivalent as if both of them were shechted in front of you. And that's what Rashi says over here. Mishani Hakanami, Kevin de Ata Hashta Yayin Kaman. Since at this point we're going to make Kiddush, and the Yayin is in front of us, Umizuman de Bracha, it's ready for the Bracha to be made on it, Keman de Shchitei Tarvayu de Gabe Kodoshim Dami. It's the equivalent of both Korbanot being shechted in front of us. So you're right, in a scenario where you don't have the Yayin, then you can discuss whether I go now and make a decision to go make a Birkat HaYayin or make a Birkat HaZman. But in order to make Kiddush al HaYayin, you have to have the Yayin there. Once the Yayin's there already, it's the equivalent of both of them now being available to you. And now you have to make a choice. Once both are available to you, which one goes first? Then we go back to the natural hierarchy, which is Tadir goes first. Just like with the two Korbanot, if you shechted the Shlamim and then shechted the Chatat Vasham, in that case, we're going to tell you, put the Shlamim on hold and do the Chatat Vasham because you already shechted it. So it's over here. Since you already have the Yayin here, and it's Tadir, then go ahead and do the Birkat HaYayin, and we'll come back and deal with Birkat HaYom. But in that case, again, we have no proof to the question that we have, which is when you mistakenly engage in Enu Tadir, do we suspend that in order to engage the Tadir? The Gemara is saying, in any case where you're engaged in both items already, then we will say, go back to the natural hierarchy and do the Tadir. But here, in cases where we're not engaged in both, do we suspend the one that is Enu Tadir to do the Tadir? Again, we don't have an answer to that question yet. Gemara says again, Tashma de Rabbi Yochanan, Halacha mitvalel adam shel mincha, v'achar kach shel musafim. So again here, where you have a conflict between whether you should daven mincha first or musaf first, in that scenario, Rabbi Yochanan tells you to daven mincha first. Now, the chiyuv of musaf came or devolved upon you first, because musafim are kol hayom. So you're already obligated, you're already engaged, quote-unquote, in the issue of musaf, and now we're telling you, despite that, when mincha shows up, we tell you to daven mincha. So we say, to do the tadir, despite the fact that you're already, quote-unquote, engaged in the musafin. So, Achanami, so to over here, kevin demati zman tfilat mincha, keman deshchitei tarvayu dami. Once you enter the zone of mincha, then we're no longer, you're engaged in musaf. You're not engaged in mincha, you're engaged in both now. You have an obligation to daven musaf, you have an obligation to daven mincha. Yes, the obligation to daven musaf came first, but nevertheless, at this point, you have an obligation in both. It's as if you have both animals shechted in front of you. In that case, the governing principle will be tadir, and you'll do mincha first. But that still doesn't answer our question. Shagat Aryeh makes a couple of points over here with regards to a nature of tadirut. The Gemara here says that in order to be considered tadir, you need to be both frequent and you have to be obligatory. Something that's done on a frequent basis, obligated to be done that way. So the Shakadarya, based on that, wants to question Nebuke Yosef's principle that when it comes to putting on talit and tefillin in the morning, that we put on talit first, and then we put on tefillin. Because the talit we put on every day of the week. Tefillin we only put on weekdays, not on Shabbat and Yomim Tovim. So based on that, the Shakadarya says, I don't understand. When it comes to the putting on of tzitzit, tzitzit is not an obligation. It is a choice. We are pushing ourselves into an obligation by putting on a four-cornered beged. But if you didn't wear a four-cornered beged, you wouldn't have to put on tzitzit. So how can you call it tadir when it's not something that's obligatory? And therefore the Shagat Aryeh questions this idea that the tzitzit have to be put on before the tefillin because of an issue of tadirut. It's just not true the way the Gemara defines tadirut over here. The second thing the Shagat Aryeh points out is in a scenario where it is Shabbat v'Rosh Chodesh. And a person is benching, and he comes to the part in the benching where he has to say the Me'in HaMa'ora, and he has to say both Ritzei for Shabbat, and he has to say Yalev Yovo for Rosh Chodesh. What happens if he skips Ritzei, and then begins to say Yalev Yovo? Does at that point, does he finish up Yalev Yovo, or does he stop Yalev Yovo and go back to Ritzei? So you see here from the Gemara that when you have this Shechtin LeTarvayu, when both of them are Shechtin in front of you, then in that scenario, we tell you to stop and go back and do the one that's supposed to be done first. The question that we have here is when you shechted one of them, the wrong one, and then you have the other one, should you start the processing of the other one? But the Gemara says here, when you have both of them in front of you, they're both shechted, then we tell you to take the precedence and go to the hierarchy and do the one that is proper. And so the Shagadayas is based on that. In a case like that, where you went to Yalev Yovo, so instead of finishing Yalev Yovo and then going back and doing Ritzei, he suggests that you would have to stop in the middle of Yalev Yovo, and then begin to say Ritzei, because again, you're obligated in both of them. And since you're already obligated in both of them, that means that we're going to demand of you to do it in the right order, even though you might have started Yalev Yovo inappropriately. So Shagat Aryeh uses this answer of the Gemara, answer that halachic question with regards to the precedence of Yalev Yovo and Ritzei in a case where mistakenly start to say Yalev Yovo before you say Ritzei. Amar Le Ravacha Brei D'Ravashi D'Ravina, Shachato Kodem Chatzot Pasul. If you shecht the korban of Pesach before midday, it is pasul. Because it says about the korban of Pesach that has to be done ben arba'im in the afternoon. Kodem l'tamid. If he shechted it before the tamid shall ben arba'im, kasher. It's okay, the korban of Pesach. Now, the korban of Pesach is the only korban that is supposed to be brought after the tamid shall ben arba'im. And that is because by the tamid shall ben arba'im, it says ben arba'im. Whereas by the Korban of Pesach, it says not only Ben Arba'im, but also Ba'erev. And therefore, Korban of Pesach, which has both Erev and Ben Arba'im said about it, should be after the item, the Korban Tamid, that only Ben Arba'im has said about it. But here, the individual did it incorrectly, and he brought the Korban of Pesach before the Korban of Tamid. And the Braita tells us, Kasher, that it's fine. V'hei, mimareis v'domo. You suspend the Korban of Pesach. You have someone mix the blood so it doesn't coagulate. Achi Zrok Adam. Until you do the Zrikat Adam of the Tamid Shem Ben Harbaim. So you see here that Tadir Shenu Tadir, the Tamid Shem Ben Harbaim should have gone first. And you mistakenly went ahead and brought the Korban of Pesach first. We tell you to suspend activity on the Korban of Pesach. And then gauge in the Tamid Shem Ben Harbaim. Finish up the Tamid Shem Ben Harbaim and then come back to the Korban of Pesach. This is exactly what we're looking for. And here's your answer, that we suspend the Sheinu Tadir, and we engage in the Tadir. It says, Achamai Skinan, Kagon de Kodim, Shachte the Tamid, Bereisha. It's a case where he shechted the Tamid Shinabayim already. So basically we're creating the same scenario we had before, where you have Shkita of both animals in front of you. So you're now engaged in both of them. Before you asked, had you asked us before you shechted the Tamid Shoben Arbayim, we don't know what the answer would have been there. But now that you're coming to us after you already shechted the Tamid Shoben Arbayim, we're going to tell you, finish up the Tamid Shel Ben Arba'im, and then go back to the Korban HaPesach. Normally, Ravacha Saba, the Ravashi, Matnita Nami Deka. The Mishnah is Meduyak, that's the scenario. The Tani Aji Zrok Adam. It tells you, wait until you just do the Zrikat Adam of the Tamid Shel Ben Arba'im, and then re-engage with the Korban HaPesach. The Lok Tani, it doesn't write over there, Aji Shchot Bizrok Dam. Doesn't tell you, wait until you shech the Korban Tamid Shel Ben Arba'im and do the Zrikat Adam. It just says do Zrikat Adam, which implies that it was already shechted when he comes to ask the question to us. And again, that same scenario we had before, which is Tarvayu Shechtayu, that both of them are shechted in front of us. In that case, we're going to tell you to engage in the Tadir because you're already engaged in it. You already started to do it. Once you started to do it, we're going to tell you finish it up and then go back to the other item. So it's Shrami not that that's the scenario there. And once again, we don't have an answer to our question in a situation in which you have Tadir, Sheinu Tadir. You engage in the Sheinu Tadir. Do we tell you to suspend performance on the Sheinu Tadir and engage in the Tadir? Or we tell you to finish up the Sheinu Tadir and then deal with the Tadir? Again, in all these scenarios, we thought we had proofs to it. In every scenario, the Gemara answers that it's already when you've started to engage in the Tadir. Since you've already begun to engage in the Tadir, it's no longer a question. Just finish up the Tadir and then go back to the Sheinu Tadir. Our question is, before you engage in the Tadir, what should you do? And that we don't have an answer to. Now, the Shagat Aryeh also points out over here something interesting, which is, the Gemara assumes here that the Tamid Shel Ben Arba'im goes before the Korban HaPesach because of Tidirut. But as we already noted, and Rashi knows this as well, the reason that the Tamid Shel Ben Arba'im goes before the Korban HaPesach has nothing to do with Tidirut, it has to do with the language that is associated with it. It's only Ben Arba'im. The Korban HaPesach is Erev and Ben Arba'im. So that's why it goes later. So it's not really a question of Tidirut, Eno Tidirut. It has to do with the question of the Gzeret HaKatuv, the Tamid Shel Ben Arba'im goes before the Korban HaPesach. Shagai suggests that the din of Erev and Ben Arba'im is only said by the Shechita of the Korban. It's not said by the rest of the processing of the Korban. He says the reason that the Tamid Shel Ben Arba'im in its entirety goes before the Korban HaPesach is to do with Tidirut. So he says that it's a mix of the Gzeret HaKatuv and Tidirut that makes the Tamid Shel Ben Arba'im be processed before the Korban HaPesach. Right now, the Gemara finishes off with the last part of the Mishnah, Ukulan Kohanim Rishaim. In all Rishaim, in all these cases, the Kohanim could eat it in any which way they please. So the Gemara says, my taima. How come the Kohanim get to choose how they eat it? Or why is it that the Kohanim get to choose how they eat it? Amar Kra, the Pasuk says in Parshat Korach with regards to Matnot Kuhuna, says, Ve'edver Hashem Aron ve'ani, hinei netati lecha et mishmeret shumotai, v'chol kodshei b'nei Yisrael lecha netatim, limoshcha, ulevanecha lecha kolam. So the Gemara darshins from the word the moshcha, legedula, for greatness. And as Rashi notes over here, that the targum of the word moshcha is lirabu, which is gedula, for elevated status, for being royalty. Kederech shemilachim ochlim, the way that kings eat, and kings eat any way they want. They can have the food prepared in any which way they want. The Kohanim have that same right. Now, that could be what the Gemara is after, or it could be what we discussed yesterday in the Mishnah, that the question of what happens when the Kohanim have no preference, or what is the default status of the Korbanot, and that we said is that it has to be tzaloi. It's roasted and eaten with chardah, with mustard, because that's the way that royalty eats. And the Gemara might be asking here, my taima, how do you know that the default is tzaloi? That is because of the mashka, because you have to eat it like royalty, and that dictates what gets precedence over here in terms of how you eat it. Had you had a preference, that would have been what dictated. But if you don't have a preference, then it's the mashka, it goes by the gdula. So the Gemara could be answering one of those two questions, whether why it is that tzaloi is the default, or why is it that you get to choose the way that you eat the korbanot in the mikdash. Okay, the next mishnah, Amar Rabbi Shimon. If you see shemen being distributed to the Kohanim in the Yazara, you don't have to ask, what is the source for this shemen? Ela motar v'kikei minchot Yisrael. It is either the leftover shemen from the minchat v'kikim, which is a minchat ma'afet tanur of Yisraelim, but it's unique in the fact that it's not balul b'shemen. All the other minchot are balul b'shemen, the shemen gets mixed up in them, and therefore all the shemen is used. On the other hand, when it comes to the rikikei matzot, that is the minchat mafet tanur, over there you anoint it. You do a yitzikat shemen afterwards, but you do not put on the shemen in the stage of balul. And for that reason, there is leftover shemen, or shemen that doesn't get totally absorbed into the rakik, because it's only put on afterwards. Whether that's because there's only a requirement to be moshechet min kai, like the Greek letter kai, or because of the fact that there's just excessive oil over there, and the excessive oil is separated away from the mincha. The log shemen shel mitzorah. And the other is the log shemen that the mitzorah brings, from which they sprinkle, and then the leftovers of that shemen, the Torah tells us, goes to the Kohanim. So those are the only two forms of shemen that can be distributed in the mikdash. Implied in that is that Rabbi Shimon believes that there's no such thing as a nidvat shemen. You can't bring shemen as a nidavah, because otherwise it'd be another item that would be distributed in the mikdash. Imra'ita shemen shunitan agave ishim. If you see oil being placed on the pyre, You don't have to ask what the source of that oil is. Ella, the only two choices are, mutar rikikei minchat kohanim. It is the leftover oil from the minchama fetanur of rikikei matzor of the kohanim. The difference between kohanim and Israelim is that kol minchat kohen is kalil. The entire minchat goes on the mizbeach. So suppose to the Israel where the leftovers go to the kohanim, so the extra oil would go to the kohanim. In the case of the kohen's mincha, it's kulo kalil, and therefore there's no leftovers. It all goes on the pyre. So that excess oil will go on the pyre. Uminchat kohen mashiach. And the minchat chavidin that's brought by the kohen gadol, machetzita boker, machetzita erev. And the reason being is because, as Rashi notes over here, the ratio of oil to solet is so great. Normally, in a regular korban mincha, you have isaron solet that's mixed with the log shaman. On the other hand, by the chavite kohen gadol, you have isaron solet that's mixed with three log shaman. And so the three log shaman give you this excessive amount of oil that cannot completely be absorbed into the flour that's there. So if you see them putting oil onto the ishim, that's probably one of the two sources for the oil that's being placed on the pyre. And now the statement, which we noted before, she'emit nadvim shemen, because you cannot donate shemen. So the only shemen that's either going on the pyre, or the shemen that's being eaten by the kohanim, is sourced from one of these items. Rabbi Tarfon omer, mit nadvim shemen. Then Rabbi Tarfon says you can donate shemen, but what's not clear is, if you do donate shemen, how is it treated? And that's the first line in the Gemara, Amar Shmuel. The Divrei Rabbi Tarfon, according to Rabbi Tarfon, mit nadev shemen kumtzo, person who donates shemen takes off a kometz from it, meaning a fistful of the oil, v'she'arav ne'achalim, and the remainder is given to the kohanim, my taima. What is the source for this, or how do you know that that's the way you treat it? Because Amar Kra, the pasuk says, in the beginning of Vayikra, Yikra Bet, pasuk Aleph, nefesh ki takriv kurban mincha la'ashem, so that tiyeh kurbano, v'yatzak aleha shemen, v'natan aleha livona. So that is about the mincha, kurban mincha. And the question is, why do you need the word korban there? It could be nefesh ki takriv mincha l'ashem. What does the additional word of korban teach you? Melameid shemitnadvim shemen. From there you learn that you donate shemen. V'chi mincha. And it's similar to a mincha. Ma mincha kumtza. Just like by a mincha, you take off the kometz from it, and that goes on the pyre, that goes on the mizbeach. V'she'ara nechalim. And the residual is given to the kohanim to be eaten. Av shemen kumtzo v'she'ara nechalim. Similarly, shemen, you take off the fistful, put it on the pyre, and the remainder is eaten by the kohanim. Amar Rabbi Zera, afanan namitanina. We have a Tanaic source of Mishnah that's supportive of that. Amar Rabbi Shimon, our Mishnah, she'im ra'ita shemen shemitchalek ba'azara, if you see shemen being distributed in the azara, yatayar tzarich lishol mahu. You don't have to ask what it is. Ella, the only two choices are, motar rikikei minchot Israel, lok shemen shel mitzora, she'im mitnadvim. Because there is no nidvat shemen in the Mikdash. Michlau. From there you could infer, the mandamra mitnatvim, Rabbi Tarfon says you do donate shemen in the Mikdash, mitchalek, it would be distributed. Or, in essence, you wouldn't know what it's coming from. You would not know the source of the shemen because there's a possibility that it was donated shemen. So the contrast between Rabbi Shimon's position and Rabbi Tarfon's position indicates that according to Rabbi Tarfon, there would be confusion over here. Samalei Abaye, Ema Seifa. What are you going to do with the latter half of the Mishnah? Im ra'ita shemen shenitan agabi ishim, iya ta tzarich lishol mahu. You don't have to ask what it is. Ella, the only two choices are mutar rikikei minchat kohanim, minchat kohen mashiach she'im mitnavim shemen. Michlau. From there you could infer that the mandamar mitnadev, according to what it says, you can donate shemen, kulan liishin. It goes entirely on the pyre. Because that's why you wouldn't know, according to Rabbi Tarfon, what's being put on the mizbech. For Rabbi Shimon, you know exactly what shemen's going on the mizbech. For Rabbi Tarfon, you won't know because there's another possibility. There's a third possibility, which is that it's a nidvat shemen. And that would imply that the shemen that's brought as a nidvat is put entirely on the pyre. So where it says, the Abaye kasha ratio. Abaye's diuk out of the seifa is great, but then what does he do with the ratio of the Mishnah? Rabbi Zeira, who has diuk out of the ratio of the Mishnah, kasha seifa. What does he do with the latter half of the Mishnah? So Bishlam of the Rabbi Zeira, according to Rabbi Zeira, we can explain it. Ratio bishirayim, seifa bakometz. So the difference is between the distribution of the shemen, which is the she'ireya shemen, that is in the resha. The ziyuk out of the seifa is that there is some of the shemen that goes on the mizbech, and that's the kometz that's taken off, the nidvat shemen. So since there are two parts to a nidvat shemen, according to Rabbi Zeira, which is that there's a kometz and the shirayim, they can each be placed in the respective part of the Mishnah, to say that Rabbi Tarfon would disagree with Rabbi Shimon there and not know what it is, because in the latter case, the Sefer, you would think maybe it's a Kometz of a Nidava, and in the Reisha, you'll say maybe it's the Sherei Shemen from a Nidava. But in that way, you could explain the whole Mishnah and the Diukim. El Abaye Kasha. According to Abaye, he can only be Medayek out of the Sefer, and his Diuk out of the Sefer is that it goes entirely on the pyre. So then, what is the confusion in the Reisha of the Mishnah? So, Tana Reisha, Atu Sefer. Where it says, parallel structure. They wrote about the Reisha because of the Sefer. Where it says, Bishlam HaSefer, Tani Mishum Reisha. Wait a minute. When you're speaking about parallel structure, that makes sense in a case where you say something in the Reisha, and then you want to continue or bring a parallel structure in the Sefer. El Reisha Mishum Sefer, Mitani. Where do you ever say that the Reisha is governed by what's in the Sefer? Just skip the Reisha and say the Sefer. The only reason you have to say the Reisha is because of the Sefer, then skip the Reisha, go directly to the Sefer. If you already said the Reisha, then you want to bring something down, that'll go into the Sefer and that'll be parallel structure. But to make something in the first place parallel structure, that's not a normal structure or literary style of a Mishnah. So Mar says in, there is such a thing, because Amri B'marava and Eretz Yisrael, they say, Tana Reisha Mishum Sefer. There are some instances where we do invoke this principle of parallel structure, even though it's the Sefer that is Dafka, and the Reisha that is Lav Dafka. I'm going to say the same thing here for Abaye. The Sefer is Dafka. That's the place where Rabbi Shimon says, you know exactly what it is. But had you believed that Nidvat Shemen, you wouldn't know what it is. But in the Reisha, even if you had Nidvat Shemen, you'd still know what it is. Why did it bring down that scenario? To give you the contrast between the Reisha and the Sefer. The Sefer is talking about the pyre, and the Reisha is talking about the Kohanim. And so we bring the similar genre of explanation in the Reisha as we do to the Sefer. But there's no diuk out of the Reisha. It's just brought out to a Sefer. Right? Tashma. Yayin kedivir Rabbi Kiva, lasfalim. Shemen kedivir Rabbi Tarfon, the ishim. So here we have the yayin, which is the ability to donate yayin to the Mikdash as a libation. Over here we attribute it to Rabbi Kiva, not because Rabbi Tarfon disagrees. Rabbi Tarfon agrees. But only because Rabbi Kiva disagrees about the Shemen. So we bring Rabbi Akiva's attribution with regards to the Yayin, and say, Yayin, according to Rabbi Akiva, gets poured into the piping that's on the southwestern corner of the Mizbeach, like the Mishnayot and Sukkah tell us, and you pour the libation over there. Shemen Kedivir Rabbi Tarfon Lishim goes to the pyre. My love. So now that comparison in the Breita, the Yayin Kulo Lisfalim, just like the wine that goes entirely into the piping, Shemen Kulo Lishim, so too, the Shemen goes entirely to the pyre, which would be against Shmuel's position, that according to Rabbi Tarfon, you take off a kometz, put it on the Mizbeach, and then residual goes to the Kohanim. It says, Midiaria, Hadagita, Vahadagita. Now, who says that they have to be the exact same way? Yayin has its procedure, that's Lisfalim. Shemen has its procedure, that goes to the Yishim, not the entirety of it, but the kometz goes on the Yishim. Amara Papa Kitanae. This is similar to a machlok etanaim. Shemen lo yifchod milog. If you're donating shemen to the Mikdash, you shouldn't bring less than a log of shemen. Rabbi Omer shloshet lugin. You have to bring a minimum of 3 log. But my kamiflige. What's the machlok between the Tanakama and Rabbi? Amrua Rabbanan kamei de Rapapa. So the Rabbanan suggested to Rapapa that this is the explanation of that machlok. Domina umina. Domina vuki ba'atro. Question is, when you learn something from another item, do you then learn all the principles of that item from it? Or do we take whatever we need from it, and then we bring it to the locale, to the area where the mitzvah is resonant, and then we surround it with the trappings of that mitzvah? That's ikabinayu. That's the difference over here. And now we'll explain that. Rabbanon savre mamincha mitnadvim, av shemen mitnadvim. The source for the fact that there is nidvat shemen comes from a mincha. That's what we saw before, that Kurban Mincha. So just like the source, the fact that you can bring Shemen on a voluntary basis comes from Mincha, so too, Umina. From the Mincha, we will learn Log Shemen, Afkan Log Shemen. Just like by a Mincha, the baseline amount of Shemen that is brought along with the Mincha is a Log Shemen, which is learned from the Pasuk in Vayikra Yudalit by the Parshat HaMitzora. Over there it says, "V'yom Hashmini kach shnei kvasim tumimim kavsa achat bat shnatat tumima shlosha esronim solit mincha b'lula b'shemen b'log achat shemen." So there is the source of the fact that log is the baseline for a mincha. So afkan log shemen. So to over here, when you donate the shemen, it's going to be a log shemen. So we learn everything from the mincha. Number one, we learn the fact that you're allowed to donate. Number two is we learn the minimum amount, which is a log shemen, and we learn ma mincha kumta v'shiareh nechalin. Just like the mincha, you take off the kometz, and then the residual is given to the Kohanim. Avshemen kumtzo. So to the shemen, you take off a kometz, put it on the pyre. V'shirav nechalim, and the residual is eaten by the kohenim. V'idach, and Rabbi, who learns, he learns that it's shloshet lugim mimincha. He also learns it from mincha. Ma mincha mitnadvin. Avshemen mitnadvin. That's the source that we brought before. Just like a mincha is brought on a voluntary basis, so too shemen is brought on a voluntary basis. V'ukibatro. Now, once we've already learned out shemen from the mincha, we bring it back to the locale of shemen. And that shemen is found in the world of nisachim. Ma nisachim, shloshet lugim. The smallest wine libation that you could bring is 3 log. Av shemen shlosh lugim. So too, the smallest libation that you could be able to bring from oil will be 3 lugim. And that's because with regards to yayin, you have 3 different levels of yayin. You have chatziahin. You have shlishitahin and revi'itahin. Ahin is 12 log. So if it's chatziahin, it's 6 log. If it is shlishitahin, it's 4 log. If it's revi'itahin, it's 3 log. So the smallest libation that's brought along with the korban is 3 log. And so this libation, which is a wine libation, will also instruct us with regards to a shemen libation. And the shemen libation will have the same minimum standard as the yayin, that is 3 log. Umanisachim kulanisfalim. And just like by the libations, the entirety of the wine libation goes into the piping onto the mizbeach. Av shemen kulon leishin. So too by the shemen, the entirety will go to the pyre. And in that way, the Rabbanan are suggesting that this question about whether it's like Shmuel, that you take off a kometz and the residual goes to the kohanim, or whether the entire shemen goes on the mizbeach, is actually this machloki between the Rabbanan and Rabbi as to the sourcing of the right to be mitnadev shemen. Amalei Rapapala Abaye, im mincha maiti la rabbi, if Rabbi sourced it out of a mincha, to kuliyama domina umina. Everybody agrees that you learn the entirety out of the mincha, and then he would have concluded the same thing as the chachamim. Ella, rabbi me'ezrach gamarla. He learns it out from the extraneous terminology of ezrach that's written by the libations in Parshat Shalach. So from there, rabbi sources the right to give shemen libation. And since the source is from Parshat Shlach by the wine libations, then it takes on the properties of the wine libations. So Amar Rav Huna Brei the Rav Natan the Rav Papa. And Rav Huna Brei the Rav Natan comes along and challenges Rav Papa and says, "Mi matzid amar tochi? Can you really say that?" Vatanya, kurban mincha melameid shemitnadvim shemen vikama, and how much? Shlosha lugin. It's a minimum of 3 log. Uman shmayit le damar shlosha lugin. Who's the one who tells us that the minimum donation for a voluntary shemen donation is 3 log, Rabbi Vikamaiti Lami Korban. And the Brayta says the source for it is the Korban HaMincha. So that is against what you just said. You said the source for Rabbi is from Ezrach by the libations, the Nisachim that are found in Parshat Shlach. Over here you see a Brayta that says Rabbi's source is the same Pasuk that we brought before from the Mincha. Amalei, Tanya, Tanya. If there's a Brayta that says it, I can't argue on a Brayta. Rav Papa says I wouldn't have said that, but now that I have a Brayta, the Brayta governs, and I'll have to acquiesce to an explanation of the machlok between the Rabbi and the Chachamim. Right, so now we have another statement by Shmuel. Amar Shmuel, mitnadev yayin, mevi umusalvo agebe yishin. Someone who donates wine on a voluntary basis in the Mikdash, you bring the wine, and you sprinkle it on the pyre. My taima. What's the reasoning behind this? Amar Kron. The Pasuk says, the yayin takriv lenesech chatzi hahin. So again here, this is found in Parshat Shlach with regards to the Nisachim. And over there it says the Yayin will be Takriv and Nesech, will be in the libation. Chatzi Ahin, half Ahin, which is the 6th log. Ishei Reach Nichoach Lashem. It is Ishe. It goes on the Ish. It goes on the fire. Reach Nichoach Lashem. A pleasing offering to Hashem. So the Pasuk seems to indicate that there's a correlation or connection between the wine and the Eish. When is that? That's in an instance when you are mitnadev the yayin, when you give a voluntary libation of wine to the Mizbeach. V'ha'aka mechabe. So wait a minute. How can you do that? By sprinkling the wine on the pyre of the Mizbeach, you are extinguishing the pyre. And we know from the mitzvah of Trumat Deshen that in Vayikra Vav it says twice. Pasuk A, it says, V'esh on Mizbeach tukad bo lo tichbe. The Esh has to be on Mizbeach permanently. It cannot be extinguished. V'er alea kohen etzim baboker baboker recha alea ola v'ktir alea chol v'esh lamim. And then repeat it again. Esh tamid tukad al Mizbeach lo tichbe. That there is a need for a permanent fire on the Mizbeach and you cannot extinguish it. There are 2 things to note here. First of all, there's an asein alot asein associated with this. There's an assay of keeping a permanent fire on the Mizbeach, and then there's a restriction against extinguishing it. That means that you can't say, assay docha lo tase over here, because the mitzvah of the pyre on the Mizbeach is an assay and a lo tase. So just because you have an assay to bring the yayin and sprinkle it on the fire, it's not going to override the restriction against extinguishing the fire. The second thing is that the pasuk repeats the lo techbeh twice. Rashi says that the reason for that is that there are multiple lavin. You get two lavin if you extinguish the pyre on the Mizbeach. On the other hand, the Ramban indicates that the two restrictions are actually differentiated in nature. The first restriction is at the Kohanim from extinguishing the fire from on the Mizbeach. And the second one is a restriction for everyone not to extinguish any part of the pyre. But not that they're actually two lavin, it's one lav, and it's telling you the nature of that lav. But now we have a problem, which is that you're going to sprinkle this wine on the pyre, and it's going to cause it to extinguish. Where it says, kibui mitzat lo shmei kibui, that's not a problem. You're not extinguishing it in its entirety. You're just sprinkling the wine on it a little bit, will extinguish, a little bit extinguish. The restriction is only to extinguish the entire pyre, not to extinguish portions of the pyre. Ini, is that really true? A person who takes a coal off the Mizbeach, v'chiba, and then extinguishes it, chayav, then he is held accountable for extinguishing something from the Mizbeach. In this instance, the Baal Tosafot will point out that we already saw earlier, a couple of daf ago in the Masechta, that pukim, something flies off the Mizbeach, if it's already a coal, in machzirin, you don't have to put it back on the Mizbeach, which implies that naseh mitzvatah, the mitzvah is already complete, how can you now be held accountable for extinguishing it if the mitzvah is already done? So the Baal Tosafot over here say that you have to make a distinction between something that comes off the Mizbeach by itself versus something that is taken off the Mizbeach. If the coal pops off the Mizbeach by itself, naseh mitzvatah, the mitzvah is done, and you don't have to return it to the pyre. On the other hand, if you actively take a coal off the Mizbeach, then we don't say naseh mitzvatah because you intervened or interrupted the burning of the coal and you took it off the Mizbeach. And despite the fact that it's a coal, you're going to be held accountable for lo techbeh, which might imply that even if you didn't extinguish it, you might be chayav just for removing it from the Mizbeach. Although many of the Rishonim believe that you still have to extinguish it in order to be chayav, but the facilitation of that has to come through you taking it off the Mizbeach. But if it just popped off the Mizbeach and then you extinguished it, that would not be a problem. So you see from here that even a partial extinguishing of the pyre is something that you're going to be held accountable for. Ella, so my answer is, Delek Elahai. That was the only coal left on the Mizbeach. That was only part of the pyre that was burning. And so therefore when you took it off, you extinguished the whole fire. So you can't prove anything from that. Ibai Dema, Kibui the Mitzvah, Shiny. That doing a Kibui while you're engaged in a Mitzvah is different. Meaning that you have permission because you're doing a Mitzvah to extinguish it. So even though normally there's a restriction against kibui, when you're engaged in a mitzvah, we allow you to do kibui. It says, Tashma, the Tana Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov, klapei, which means hilkach, since, shenit na Torah litrum, the Torah says, by the trumat adeshen, do the trumat adeshen. Yoko yichabeh v'yitrum, you would think he can extinguish the coals and then take off the ashes to do the trumat adeshen. Amart, lo yichabeh. The Torah tells you, don't extinguish it. So that shows you that even when you have a mitzvah, like Trumat HaDeshen, we don't allow you to extinguish the pyre in order to accomplish the mitzvah of Trumat HaDeshen. And so why should that be different over here by Ziluf HaYayin? Why should you be given a right to do Ziluf HaYayin, which is a mitzvah, by extinguishing the pyre? We don't allow you to do the mitzvah of Trumat HaDeshen by extinguishing the pyre. So similarly over here, there should be no right to extinguish the pyre to do the mitzvah of Ziluf HaYayin. Or it says, Shani Hotam, Efshe Diyoti V'Notar. So it's a big difference. In the case of Trumat HaDeshen, he can sit and wait. If he waits long enough, the coal will extinguish itself, and he'll be able to get ashes to do Trumat HaDeshen. It's just a matter of time. If he waits long enough, he'll get what he needs from it. On the other hand, by the case of Mizalif HaYayin, you can't wait. At some point, you have to do Ziluf HaYayin on the Mizbeach, and it's always going to be an pyre that is burning, and there always will be some form of kibui that is associated with it, but that's the mitzvah. And since that's the mitzvah, we allow you to do it, despite the fact that it's extinguishing a portion of the pyre. The Gemara challenges that. It says, Tashma, Yayin kedivrei Rabbi Akiva lasfalim. This is what we quoted before, that the wine, according to Rabbi Akiva, goes into the piping. Shemen kedivrei Rabbi Tarfon liishim. And shemen, according to Rabbi Tarfon, goes to the pyre. Ve'od, Tanya. We also have another braita. Yayin nesech lasfalim. When it comes to the wine libation, Is it put in the piping or is it put on the pyre? Amart lo yichabeh. The Torah tells you, don't extinguish the pyre. So it seems to indicate that you have to put it into the svalim, into the piping. So what you see from both of these instances, that according to Rabbi Akiva, yayin that's brought in as a nidava is put into the piping. And I've got an additional brayta that says you would have thought you put the yayin on the pyre. We don't put it on the pyre because there's a restriction against kibbutz. And therefore you put it in the svalim, you put it in the piping. So that goes against what Shmuel says over here, which is that you sprinkle it on the pyre and it extinguishes whatever it extinguishes. That's not true. We just saw here that there are two brayot saying that when it comes to donations of yayin, they go into the piping and not onto the coals. For answers, lokasha, that's not a problem. Ha, the Rabbi Yehuda, ha, Rabbi Shimon. The difference here is the opinions of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, which is what's called davar she'enu mitkavein. When someone engages in an activity where they have no intent for the outcome. So here, when a person sprinkles the yayin on the coals, it's a davar she'enu mitkavein. He has no intention of extinguishing the pyre. He simply wants to do the mitzvah of putting the yayin on the coals. Rabbi Shimon believes davar she'enu mitkavein is mutar. You're allowed to do it. Rabbi Yehuda believes davar she'enu mitkavein is restricted. So now over here, in the case where you're doing zilu fayayin, according to Shmuel, following the position of Rabbi Shimon, it's davar she'enu mitkavein, you're not intending to extinguish the pyre. So you can go ahead and do the mitzvah. It's davar she'enu mitkavein. Davar she'enu mitkavein is mutar. Just as an aside, you see from here that davar she'enu mitkavein has application outside of the world of Shabbat. It applies to all mitzvot. And here the Gemara is applying it to the issue of zilu fayayin on the mizbeach. Rabbi Yehuda, on the other hand, who believes that davar she'enu mitkavein is at least asur, maybe even chayav, he's not going to let you put the yayin onto the pyre. And everybody's going to demand that you put it onto the svalim. So Shmuel, who holds a Rabbi Shimon, will darshan the pasuk of v'yayin takriv l'nesek chatzi ayin ishei reach nichoach l'Hashem. Literally, that it goes on the ishei, it goes on the pyre. Because he can reconcile that with doing it in a manner that's davar she'enu mitkavein. On the other hand, for Rabbi Yehuda, where it'd be impossible to do such a thing, because davar she'enu mitkavein is at least asur, maybe chayav, then you can't interpret the pasuk that way. Therefore, he interprets the pasuk to be figurative, which is that when you bring a yayin nesech, it is the equivalent of something that goes on the pyre, which is pleasing before Hashem. It's like the ishei reach nichoach l'Hashem, but not that it is actually ishei reach nichoach l'Hashem. And he's compelled to do that because of his view with regards to davar she'enu mitkavein. This raises an extremely important issue, which Rashi already begins to address, and then leads to the major positions of the Rishonim in Shas with regards to davar she'enu mitkavein and psik reishe. We'll raise the issue now. We'll finish up the Gemara and then come back and do it a little more be'iyun, which is over here, Rashi asks, why isn't this psik reishe v'lo yamut? Which is that we have an understanding that Rabbi Shimon believes davar she'enu mitkavein is mutar. But we have many places in Shas that the Gemara tells us that according to Rabbi Shimon, if it is a psik reishe, if it is inevitable that the action that you're engaging in will do something that is asur, do something wrong, then we say that it's asur even if it's davar she'enu mitkavein. And as Rashi points out over here, when you sprinkle oil wine onto the pyre, by definition, you're going to extinguish. And therefore it's a psik reishe. And Rabbi Shimon agrees in psik reishe that you are not mutar to do it. It's not considered to be davar she'enu mitkavein. So how can we allow it in this case? So Rashi gives the answer that over here you can be mizalef on the pyre in a way that will not cause the pyre to extinguish. If you put very, very fine drops of wine onto the pyre will not be extinguished by it, and it would be mutar. Rashi says it's not a psik reishe. There's a possibility, or it's plausible to do this avoda without extinguishing anything on the pyre. So that means that since it can be done in that manner, Rashi then says that even if he does it in a manner that does cause kibbutz, you can declare it davar she'enu mitkavein, and it can be deemed that it's not psik reishe, because there is this possibility of doing it without the outcome being kibbutz. So that's how Rashi deals with it. We're going to come back and discuss that more in detail in a minute. So where it says, the memra de Shmuel Rabbi Shimon Svirile. So that seems to indicate that Shmuel holds like Rabbi Shimon. Vamar Shmuel. You're allowed to extinguish a metal coal that is out in the public domain in order to protect the public at large. But not a coal that is from wood. So now, first of all, the difference between gachelet shel matechet and gachelet shel eitz is, gachelet shel eitz is asur midoraita. If you extinguish a wood coal, you are now in violation of a din doraita. Because in the Mishkan, the melacha of extinguishing was used to create pachman, to create coals. And so over here, if you extinguish a wood coal, then you're doing it for the purpose that it was done in the Mishkan. And it's an iser de oraita. Then if you extinguish a metallic coal, that's not what is done in the Mishkan because it doesn't create a coal afterwards. And so that's only asur midrabanan. So in a case where there's hezek derabim, there's danger to the public at large, we would suspend the din derabonan, and we allow you to extinguish the metal coal in the Rishut Rabim on Shabbat. On the other hand, for a wooden coal, which is an Isur D'oraita, can't suspend that for Hezek D'Rabim. But what you see from this is that Shmuel clearly holds like Rabbi Yehuda and not like Rabbi Shimon. Because Isaac Adatho Kershivin Svirle, if he holds like Rabbi Shimon, Afilu Gachelet She'etz Nami, then even if it's a wooden coal, you should be allowed to do it. Because the Gemara says over here, Rabbi Shimon would think that this is Mutar. Now, as the Bali Tosafot point out over here, this Gemara is extremely difficult because the Gemara is conflating two terms. It's conflating a machlok between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon with regards to davar she'eino mitkaven, when you don't intend to do the action or the malacha. In that case, Rabbi Shimon says patur. Rabbi Yehuda says either asur or chayav. There's another machlok between them with what's called malacha she'eino tzricha l'gufa. A malacha that you're doing where you don't want the outcome that it was done for in the Mishkan. So the classic case is a case where you're digging a ditch in the ground. So that would be considered to be choresh or zoreya. You're doing avodat adama, which is asur on Shabbat. But if the person is digging it out for the intention of keeping the dirt and not for working the field, then that's what we call melacha shein tzricha l'gufa. You're doing the same melacha. You're working the field. You're digging out in the field. But on the other hand, it's not the gufa. It's not for the fixing the field itself. It's for the dirt that you want to take away from there. That's what's called melacha shein tzricha l'gufa. Over there, we also have a machloket Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda, where Rabbi Yehuda says it is chayav, and Rabbi Shimon says it is patur of al asur. So now the Gemara said, the Shmuel really hold like Rabbi Shimon about davar she'eino mitkaven. I have this case by the coals, which seems to indicate that he holds like Rabbi Yehuda and not like Rabbi Shimon. The problem is that the case over here by the coals is a case of melacha she'eino tzricha l'gufa. You're extinguishing the coal not because you want the coal. You're extinguishing the coal in order to prevent damage to other people. That's a melacha she'eino tzricha l'gufa. So just because Shmuel holds like Rabbi Shimon, the guy is the davar she'eino mitkaven, who says he has to hold like him by a melacha she'eino tzricha l'gufa? That's exactly what the Bali Tosafot are grappling with. And then he tries to suggest that maybe the two are correlated. That the way you hold by melacha she'eino tzricha l'gufa will contribute to the way that you hold by davar she'eino mitkaven. And therefore, if Shmuel holds like Rabbi Shimon in one area, in all likelihood, he should hold like him in the other area. And the Gemara's answer is exactly that. B'davar she'ein mitkaven, sabar like Rabbi Shimon. B'davar she'ein mitkaven, Shmuel holds like Rabbi Shimon, that it is mutar. Melacha she'ein tzricha l'gufa, sabar like Rabbi Yehuda. He holds like Rabbi Yehuda, that you are chayav. As the Bali Tosafot point out over here, even though this seems to be the conclusion of the Gemara, and the Rambam seemingly passes this way, that davar she'eino mitkaven is mutar, but melacha she'eino tzricha l'gufa is chayav, mixing and matching Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda. Nevertheless, the Bali Tosafot point out that in other places in Shas, we have Amoraim that consistently passing like Rabbi Shimon, like Rava, who's a Batra, and therefore we believe that Allah is like Rabbi Shimon, both for davar she'eino mitkaven and melacha she'eino tzricha l'gufa. So Amar Rav Huna, nisachim shenitme'u, any libation that went bad because it became tamei, osim lan maracha bifnei atzman v'sorfan. You make them their own pyre and you burn them. Mishum shenemar, because the pasuk says bakodesh ba'esh tisareif. That which is in the kodesh is burnt in its place. And we've already discussed this before. Wherever something goes pasul, that's where you burn it. So things that go bad in the azara or go pasul in the azara, they're burnt in the Beit HaDesh and the Beit HaSreifa in the Azara. So over here, the Gemara is indicating that even though you have a Beit HaSreifa in the Azara, nevertheless you make a separate pyre on the floor of the Azara for these items in order to burn them. And Rashi explains over here why you do that. The reason that you don't put this in the regular Beit HaSreifa and make it its own pyre is because these are liquids. And therefore, sorfan latzman, you burn them up themselves. So that their burning is distinguishable. Because if you took it into the Beit HaSreifa where there are solids burning and just poured the liquids in there, it would not be clear, obvious, or apparent that you're burning these items in the Beit HaSreifa. So for that reason, we tell you to segregate it out, make it its own mokeid, its own pyre, and then burn it on the floor of the Azara. So there, you're burning it b'makom kadosh, in the place where it went pasul. And then the Gemara says, Tanya Nami Ochri, a brayta that supports this contention. Hadan, Adam ba'shemim ba'minachot ve'nisachim shenitmu zelayan marachah b'fnei atzman v'sorfan. You make them their own pyre and burn them up. Now, obviously, according to Rashi's explanation, you'd have to leave out the word minachot over here in the list because Rashi says this is uniquely associated with liquids and not with davar yavesh or solid objects. Amalei Shmuel the Rav Chana bakta. Shmuel says Rav Chana from Baghdad. Aitili be'asara. Bring me 10 people. Be'melacha kamaitu. And I will say in front of them to you, Nisachim shenitmu, osila and maracha b'fnei atzman v'sorfan. Nisachim that become tamei, you make them their own pyre and burn them by themselves. So he wanted to do it in front of 10 people in order to make it into a public issue or pursuum about it. He felt that the halacha was correct and maybe not well known, and so he wanted to publicize the fact that this is the halacha. Okay, now as we mentioned before, we're going to go back and discuss what comes out of this issue of being mezaleif yayin al mizbeach. The reason this Gemara is so pivotal is because of what Rashi noted before, that it seems to look like a psik reshe. Now Rashi comes up with a way to solve the problem as to why it's not a psik reshe, and Rabbi Shimon would think that it's davar she'ein mitkaven and mutar. So Rashi addressed that issue. But the Aruch, who has a famous shita with regards to psik reshe, de lo nechale, when you have a psik reshe where you don't want the outcome, what is the status of psik reshe de lo nechale? In a case of psik reshe de nechale, it's a psik reshe where you want the outcome, over there we're going to hold you liable even if it's a davar she'ein mitkaven. And that the Aruch says explicitly, when you cut off the chicken's head to get the blood and not to kill the chicken, that's a davar she'ein mitkaven. Nevertheless, it is a psik reshe, because you're cutting off the head, of course the animal's going to die. And then if you tell me that it's dead, lo nechale, he doesn't want the animal to die, well if he doesn't want the animal to die, he won't cut the animal's neck off. The fact that he cut the animal's neck off means that he knows and he wants it to die so that he can get to the blood that he needs. And so therefore it's a psik reshe denechale. From that, the Aruch says that only when it's a psik reshe denechale is it problematic. But if it's a psik reshe de'enu nechale, it's a psik reshe, but you don't want the outcome, over there, the Aruch says it is mutar legamre. And this Gemara over here is one of the proofs to this position of the Aruch. So over here it says, Mizalfin ayayin alishim, you let us sprinkle the wine onto the pyre, and despite the fact that you're extinguishing it, we don't call it a psik reshe. So Aruch says, I know you don't call it a psik reshe, because you don't want it to be extinguished. When you sprinkle the wine onto the pyre, you don't want it to extinguish. So that's a classic case of psik reshe, delo nechale, which he claims is mutar legamre. The Balei HaTosafot in a number of places in Shas, as well as many of the Shonim who follow the same view of the Balei HaTosafot, believe that a psik reshe delo nechale is not mutar like the Aruch, but rather it is patur aval asur. And that is because the Balei HaTosafot in the Gemara in Shabbat famously write that a psik reshe delo nechale is the equivalent of a melacha she'en atzricha legufa. And since it's similar to melacha she'en atzricha legufa, we know the din, even if you pass it like Rabbi Shimon, by melacha she'en atzricha legufa is patur aval asur. And that's how Balei Tosafot and many Rishonim view the din of psik reshe delo nechale as being a melacha she'en atzricha legufa, being patur aval asur. But then they have to deal with our Gemara over here with regards to mitzalfin ayayin. So they invoke Rashi's principle over here, which is the fact that there is a possibility, or it's plausible to do the zilufa yayin without extinguishing the fire. And therefore, if you do it, even if you do extinguish the fire, it's not considered to be a psik reshe, because there was a possibility of doing it without extinguishing the pyre. Which brings us to the Pshut HaRivash, who discusses when is something considered to be psik reshe, and when is something considered to be davar she'ein mitkaven. How high a probability do you need in order to make it that it's not considered to be a psik reshe, rather a davar she'ein mitkaven? The Pshut HaRivash, in loose terms, says that it can't be this remote possibility. It can't be some unique or impossible situation in which it's plausible to do this without violating the Avera, and then it won't be called a psik reshe. He says it has to be something that is reasonable, and something that is practical, and plausible for a regular person to do. Then if that's a high enough probability that it could be done, then even if it's done in the manner that is not the heter way, nevertheless, it will not be considered a psik reshe, it will still be davar she'eino mitkaven. And put together a mekorot that you can take a look at, which basically first speak to the reason as to why Rabbi Shimon believes davar she'eino mitkaven is mutar. And that could come for one of two reasons. It's either because imein kavanah, ein maseh. If you don't have intent, it's not considered to be an action. Or, even if you believe when you don't have intent, it's considered to be an action, but the action is not considered to be an action of isur when you don't intend for it. Or, even if it's considered to be a maseh isur, it's not connected to the individual who's doing it. So that's what Davar Sheino Mitkaven does. Now, Rabbi Shimon agrees by Psik Reishe that that reverses whatever Davar Sheino Mitkaven does for you. And that could be, again, for a number of reasons. It could even be that when you have a Psik Reishe, it's Kimit Kavein Chashiv Le. We deem it as if you have intent for the outcome because it is the inevitable outcome of the situation. And again, that can manifest itself in different formulations. Or, because it is Nechale, because it's the outcome that you want, therefore, by definition, you must have intent for that outcome or for that Isur. We saw that in the Oruch with regards to the Psik Reishe, cutting off the head of the animal. If you don't want to cut off the head of the animal, don't cut it off. If you're cutting it off to get to the dam, then you want the head of the animal to be cut off. And therefore, you're doing it in a willing and intentional manner by which we're going to now assign that action to you. Now, a Psik Reishe de lo nechale, in some senses, undermines whatever the Psik Reishe does to turn the Davar Sheino Mitkaven into something that is asur now. Then the Psik Reishe de lo nechale, according to the Oruch, must reverse that or unwind whatever that is. And therefore, according to him, it makes it mutar lechatchila. And those that say it's asur midrabanan, psik reishe lo nechle, and some that say that it's even asur midoraita. And so therefore, the lo nechle aspect of it, the fact that you don't want that outcome or that desired outcome, makes it either now that we can't say kimit chavein chavjile, that we classify it as if he has kavanah for this action, because he doesn't want the outcome. So you can't consider it as if he's intending for that outcome. Or, before we said, since he wants the outcome, then he definitely intends for the Masa Isur. But here, where he doesn't want the outcome, and he makes it clear to us that he doesn't want the outcome, then he certainly isn't mitkavein to the Isur. And therefore, that gives us the different formulations through the Rishonim as to what happens when you have a Psik Reishe de lo nechale. According to, again, the Oruch, it's mutar la'atchila, and there are a slew of other Rishonim and explanations that we see throughout Shas, where those that believe that it's mutar lechatchila. The mainstream view is that it's asur midrabanan, and that's the view of the Bali Tosafot, because the lo nechale makes it that you don't want the outcome that is there. And that's the equivalent of melacha she'ena tzricho gufa, where you don't want the outcome, you want the maaseh without the outcome, and that's similarly over here. And therefore they deem it to be melacha she'ena tzricho gufa, which Rabbi Shimon classifies as in patur aval asur. And there are a couple of rishonim, or instances, where they say it's asur midoraita. And in the Makarot, we also bring an additional number of items that are not classified as Psik Reishe. We already said the Lo Nechale, but we have other instances, like here with the Rashi in Zvachim, which is, if, first of all, if the action can be done by someone else without the resultant Isur, then that might be a consideration that it's not considered to be a Psik Reishe. Or, Yeshef Shirut Lasot Eremasev Derech Heter. You can do it in a manner that is Heter. So that goes to the Rivosh, as to how plausible there'd have to be that this person can do it, or even if someone else can do it, is that enough to have it be considered that it's not Psik Reishe? According to Rashi over here, it seems like the fact that someone could do it in a way that doesn't cause kibui, then that makes it that it's no longer a Psik Reishe. And then if you do it in the regular manner, even if it results in kibui, it's not Psik Reishe, it's a Davar Sheino Mitkaven, and you are mutar to do such a thing. There are others that suggest that if along with the action of Isur, you also do an action of Heter, that's enough to make it that it's not considered to be a Psik Reishe. Or, if it's not just Psik Reishe de lo nechale, but it's kashelo, it's something that is detrimental in a strong way towards him. So the Sefer Rishonim believe that that's enough to make it that it's not classified as a Psik Reishe. And that brings us to the definition of de lo nechale. What does it mean that he doesn't want it? So there are places in Shas where there are those that say de lo ichpatle. Even if he's indifferent about it, that's the same as lo nechale. But there are many instances where the lo nechale means that he doesn't want it, but that implies that imid the lo ichpadle, if he's indifferent about the action, that would be psik reishe. As well as there's a tshuva that we've spoken about in the past from Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, the guy's opening up a refrigerator with a light in it on Shabbat, where he says that you can't claim the lo nechale is because you're going to violate the nisur. That can't be the source for the lo nechale, is because if you do this, you're going to violate Isur. But had it not been on Shabbat, and you would have opened it, you would have been happy with the result. It's only because it's Shabbat, and there's an Isur that it makes it the Lo Nechale. That's not classified as the Lo Nechale, and it will still be deemed to be Psik Reishe. That's just a quick summary of the concept of Psik Reishe, and the important part of the Mizalfin Aliyayin that it plays in this Machloket as to what is the status of Psik Reishe, the Lo Nechale, or why is this not considered to be a Psik Reishe over here. With that, we finish the 10th parak, Hadron Halach, Kol HaTadir.